Good morning. This is Focus 580, a morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for your regular host, David Inge. Glad you could listen. During this hour of Focus 580, we'll talk about cameras and photography, something we like to do every once in a while on the show. Lots of us are into taking pictures, and of course, the artistic creative challenges are fun to talk about, but also the cameras themselves and all the new developments in digital cameras and so forth will be grounds for conversation during this hour. Our guest, Brian Johnson. He is a professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois in the College of Journalism. He teaches photojournalism. He's also a photographer. Had a career prior to his appointment here as a photojournalist, and he knows a lot about taking pictures, again, both the art and the science. So we'll talk about those things and welcome your questions. If you'd like to join us, all you have to do is pick up the telephone, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL if you match the letters with the numbers. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Please feel free to join us. And Brian Johnson, thanks for being here.
Sure, my pleasure.
Always fun.
Yeah.
Well, I've got digital cameras on my mind.
Everybody does.
Yes. Well, I also...
Are there any other kind?
Well, apparently Kodak doesn't believe there are.
No, that's right. And in some ways, I think Kodak's right. You know, what's weird about Kodak, though, is that they have such a broad product line and so many professionals depend on them. But, you know, in sort of a funny way, we had the early adopters, many of whom were really professional shooters, people, you know, like the Associated Press.
Yeah.
Then we had the early adopters who like gadgets, so they got some of the early digital cameras. But there's a pretty large group of professionals that have been pretty slow to get into digital photography, but even some of those people now are starting to come over.
Yeah, well, I've seen the pro digital cameras now, like they're using at the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette.
Right.
And they're very impressive. I mean, I guess these things are pretty expensive, but now...
Well, you know, yes, and it depends kind of where you go.
Yeah.
You can spend $5,000 fairly easily. Canon just came out with a new camera fairly recently that has 16 megapixels for the imaging chip, and it sells for around $8,000.
Mm-hmm. But that was much higher cost, you know, in just a few years ago.
Oh, right, absolutely. I mean, one of the first digital cameras that Kodak came out with sold for $15,000, and I think it was like a 1.3 megapixel camera.
Yeah. Well, the whole issue there, you know, if people don't know this, is, you know, the higher megapixels of the camera has, the higher the resolution. And if you're talking about...
The more detail.
Yeah, and if you're talking about print, then you need that detail.
If you're... Particularly if you're talking about magazine photography, catalog photography, wedding photography, portraiture, where, you know, people are going to have huge enlargements made.
Whereas if, you know, for consumer, you know, 3x5, 4x6.
Right. No, and that's the amazing thing is that the prices have just plummeted so far now that for a discovery course that I'm teaching, I just ordered several cameras for the class. And it's a 3.2 megapixel camera. And, you know, by including the shipping, everything, it's $184. $184 for 3 megapixel with a 3x optical zoom, and I mean, pretty amazing for dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a caller to talk with.
Great,
let's go ahead and do that. We have a listener in Champaign on line number one. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay. I'm a carpenter and use a digital camera to document my work. When I bought the camera, I looked into it and decided to be quite specific in its use, so I only got a 2 meg camera strictly for emailing and web use. And I'm never ever going to print hard copy.
Right.
I am very happy with the performance of the camera. It's got 3x optical, except I am continually faced with the situation that the rooms in which I work, sometimes maybe details in a stairwell or bathroom or kitchen even, are so small
right
that I can't get a good vantage point. I've learned to use the provided software Photo Stitch, where you kind of do the sprinkler dance, you know, and shoot the successive pictures.
Right.
And it'll stitch them together. And it's kind of a okay result sometimes, depending on various factors. Is this just, I never did much picture taking before the digital. Is there any reasonable solution to being able to take pictures in close quarters like this?
Right. You know, I think the main thing that you'll probably want to think about doing is actually taking some of those details and actually doing a separate picture of those details, rather than, you know, doing the overall shot and doing the panoramas like you are. That's actually probably a pretty smart thing for you to be able to do. And then for those details, do individual shots of those details that you want to illustrate.
I guess I misspoke or didn't think it out clearly when I first said it. I do what you say to get details. I guess it's when I'm in a small room and need to convey
the size
the
of
overall,
it. Right.
The overall. Like if I want a document for one of my clients that I provided all the handicap required
right.
accessories in a bathroom.
Right.
It'd be nice to do it in one shot.
Right, exactly.
You see with your naked eye.
I see.
But with the camera, I end up having to take several shots.
Right.
And I can't get far enough away
right.
from such a room to even shoot a straight elevation.
Right, exactly. Well, one thing you can try that's not going to help you a lot, but it might help a little bit. For many of the cameras, there are accessory wide-angle attachments that you can get.
Uh-huh.
So that's something that you might try. It'll give you a little bit more in each picture. But it absolutely is a tremendous problem when you're in those tight quarters. Even when a professional is shooting those, they can get an ultra wide angle lens, something like a 16 millimeter lens or a 14 millimeter lens to try to capture all that. But with the typical type of camera that someone in your situation is going to get, yeah, you are going to be limited. And, you know, show it all in one picture. You can try the accessory wide angle attachment. That might help a little bit. But still, I think, given those circumstances, I think you're stuck doing just exactly what you're already doing.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Now, the accessory lenses would be for the particular model?
It will depend. There are some that, depending upon the camera that you get, they might have little threads on the front of the lens
mm-hmm,
you can just
mm-hmm.
screw in. It's sort of like a fancy filter.
Sure.
That you can get. I noticed with the Canon cameras that I just ordered, they have a little ring that you take off of the lens,
mm-hmm.
and then the wide-angle attachment apparently goes over that and kind of bayonets back on that ring that you just removed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there are a variety of, you know, different ways to do it, of kind of converting the more of the point and shoot type of camera into being able to have these extra lens accessories.
Okay. We have a couple of the callers waiting. We'll go next to another Champagne listener, line number 2. Good morning.
Hi, Brian. I'm a lucky girl that has a Canon Rebel regular camera.
Uh-huh.
And then Santa Claus brought a 5 megapixel Kodak.
Uh-huh. Great.
Okay, and I'm wondering, yeah, I'm lucky, but I'm wondering, how do you equate megapixels with the clarity you see in regular film?
Sure. Well, with the Canon camera that just came out, it's the 1D Mark II, I believe is the model number. That is a 16 megapixel chip in it, and they compared it to a 200 ISO speed film, and the 16 megapixel camera was sharper than the film was. When Canon had their 11 megapixel camera that was the predecessor to this one, they did the same test and they found them to be about equal.
I'll be darned.
Now there's something else that really doesn't ever get talked about, but it isn't just the number of megapixels, but the actual physical dimensions of the imaging sensor. And on these higher-end cameras, the sensor itself is about the same size as a 35 millimeter piece of film or a single frame of film. On the less expensive cameras that most of us end up using, the imaging sensor itself is quite a bit smaller. So on the kind of the less expensive pro cameras or the serious amateur type SLR cameras, it's about the size of the APS size film, or maybe like the size of a big postage stamp, you might think of it. And then on some of the point and shoot cameras, it's really pretty small. They're only like a third of an inch in size. So while you have enough megapixels with some of these cameras, the sensor is smaller, so you don't get as much sharpness as if you had a larger sensor.
Okay, so it there is a difference, and it's not just the person taking the pictures.
Right.
Okay, could I just ask you one more silly question?
Sure.
I have lens envy, and when we were at KCPA, there was a photographer from the News Gazette, and he had a black thing at the end of his big lens. And he said it takes out sideways light.
Right, yeah, and that's...
what do you call that?
It's called a lens hood, or sometimes it's called a lens shade.
Uh-huh.
And basically what it is, if you've ever been outside kind of looking into the sun and you put your hand up to your forehead,
mm-hmm.
well, that's exactly what the lens shade does, is it just kind of casts a shadow over the front of the lens to avoid flare.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, and actually sometimes when I'm shooting, just because of the angles or whatever, I'll actually hold my hand out in front of my camera, in front of the lens, hopefully not photographing my hand, but just yeah. enough to kind of cast a shadow on the front. And that can be a good temporary fix.
Oh, I'll be darned. Okay, could I ask you one more quick one?
Sure.
Okay, the difference between the Kodak professional film and the regular film they sell us?
Yes. What the difference is the professional film is color balanced, ready to use right away.
Mm-hmm.
The film that's the consumer film, the way you can think about it is just like a banana. When they ship the bananas from wherever they ship them from, they ship them green, right? Because they know they're going to ripen as they travel to the store.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the amateur films are a little bit the same way. They know that they're going to be in transit for a while and probably sitting on a shelf for a while. So, and they also know that the film changes its color balance slightly as it ages.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. So the pro film will have a more accurate color rendition the instant you need to use it. But because of that, it usually needs to be stored in a refrigerator or a freezer.
I'll be darned.
And then warmed up for about 24 hours before you use it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on.
Sure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. We'll go on next to a listener in Bloomington, Illinois, line number 3. Good morning.
Hello. We're just getting into the digital camera stuff. My wife wants to take pictures of the baby and so on, you know. Anyway, she picked up one camera a while back and was just test trial and didn't care for it herself because it didn't have image stabilization. When she got out the 10-power zoom, it got kind of shaky.
Right.
But anyway, one thing that camera did have was this little movie mode that it would do.
Sure.
And I used to do amateur movies and so on years ago and just that little camera was just cool as all get out. But I wanted to know, just out of curiosity, do you know of any of those cameras on the market that would actually do, like, stop motion? Because that's what I used to do with claymation and animation
sure.
kind of thing.
Sure.
Where I could stream pictures together, I guess, if I'm getting that.
Right, right. Well, in some ways, you could almost do that with a still digital camera.
Uh-huh.
You know, where you could just shoot the pictures and then go to the next picture and do it, and then you'd have to put it into a video editing program to put the frames together.
Uh-huh.
Some of the mini DV video cameras, though, some of them have like a photo mode where it'll capture things. I don't think many of them have kind of a stop motion mode like that would be
right.
You know, really great for what you wanted to do.
Do you know, is there any certain program that's halfway decent? I mean, I wouldn't need anything fancy, just something to stream them together, basically, I guess.
Right, right. You know, the really cool thing is that there are quite a number of pretty inexpensive programs out for doing video. On the Mac side, we have iMovie, and then on the PC side, there's, Microsoft Movie Maker.
Mm-hmm. I think it comes bundled with a lot
right.
of computers now.
Right.
Movie Maker. Microsoft Windows
right.
Movie Maker.
Okay.
And so there's really a pretty amazing array of dirt cheap programs for doing some of the video stuff. And, you know, it'll take a little bit of tinkering around, but I don't think it would be all that bad at all.
But it sparked my interest again because, you know, everybody kept telling me, well, the movie mode's not as good as some others. But, like, I don't know, maybe I'm just out of the loop or something, but it seemed like pretty good movie making to me.
Sure. Well, and you know what you could do for the stop motion thing is you could just use the still video, the still digital camera, and just do stills.
I think that's what I'll do. Yeah,
and put them together.
She has on order actually tomorrow a Canon S1IS.
Uh huh.
Have you heard of a fairly decent camera? I mean, it sounded like it was what she was wanting to do. I mean.
Right. I mean, I haven't read any of the reviews of that camera specifically. But I've always been a big fan of Canon cameras, so.
Oh yeah, she's all excited. She's finally getting a Canon camera. She does on occasion. She'll do bird pictures and things like that. And now she's wanting to do close-ups of the baby and so on. And so she wanted a 10 power at least, which is about all you can find is 10 power. But it's only like a 3.2 megapixel, but it has image stabilization.
Right.
So you won't be shaking it too much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that. The camera's got an interesting combination of, you know, the pretty good zoom, but at a pretty reasonable price.
I think I might have to go back and get that Pentax had that movie mode because it was a very small camera, but very very neat on the way it was set up, and it was easy to handle and play back.
Sure.
And so on.
One thing you might want to look into though is some of the mini DV, video cameras are getting pretty inexpensive now. So you know, $300 or so.
Uh-huh.
And you might want to explore that because if you're, as you do the sub motion, you might want to do some live motion with it at the same time. And
yeah.
With the mini DV, video cameras getting so cheap, and the quality is pretty amazing with those. That might be something else you want to look into.
Okay. Well, very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And speaking of the stop motion thing, the camera I bought about a year ago, it's a Fuji. It's got a 10-power optical zoom. It does not have image stabilization, which, unfortunately, I should have spent a little bit more to get because 10-power zoom, unless you use a tripod, it's going to be shaky.
Right, or unless you have a fast enough shutter speed
to,
you know, just take that little slice, absolutely.
But one thing that it does have is a setting where you can take 5 pictures within a second. So you hold the shutter down, and it'll take pictures as many as you hold the shutter down, but it'll save either the first 5 or the last 5, depending on how you set it.
Okay, I see.
So they're all really close together within a second, so you could do that stop motion with those stills very easily. But the other good thing about that is that chances are one of those 5 shots is going to be reasonably non-blurry.
Absolutely. No, that's the funny thing, because had a little workshop a couple years ago where some of the former U of I photo students came back, and I had them run a little workshop for our current students. And actually then we also did a book recently called See You in 7 Plus, where we had a lot of people back. And I was amazed with all the pros, all my former students and people who were students here when I was still working, how they were shooting. Nobody shot just one picture anymore. I'm saying, what are you doing? You know, why are you shooting, you know, 2 or 3 or 5 pictures when normally if you're shooting film, you would only shoot one. And John Zitch, who had been a student here, you know, way back in the early 80s, he said, you know, I've lost enough pictures over the years to someone blinking just at the moment that I took the picture that when I'm taking pictures of people, I almost universally take 3 or 4 of the person because that way I'm sure not to get a blank. And I thought, all right, that makes sense. Now, the problem is, of course, you still have to edit all those, and that becomes a little bit of a chore. So, but I can see exactly what you said, is that, you know, if you're concentrating about holding it steady and you take those, you know, you zap it off like that, you know, you don't really have to worry about blank because they might blink for one, but they certainly won't be blinking for all 5 of them.
Yeah. And, of course, now with the size of the little cards that fit in the cameras.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, you can have easily 300-400 pictures
right.
in one card. And actually, if you have – a friend of mine showed me his – I forget what model it, but he's got a 2-gigabyte compact flash card.
Right.
Which thousands in one camera.
I know. Well, the prices on the compact flash cards in particular have also just recently plummeted. So in the fall, about halfway through the fall, the prices just dramatically came down. So I bought a Lexar 1-gigabyte card. Lexar is a sort of a range of, you know, they have their professional cards and their, you know. But anyway, this is their top-of-the-line card, 1 gigabyte, and I think I paid $75 for it.
That's pretty good.
Which is incredible.
But the downside, and I think you sort of alluded to it, then you have all these hundreds of pictures that you have to look through. It just takes all the time just to even look through what you have, let alone decide and then edit what you want to actually do something with.
Right, right. And that's why I don't do that. I download them to my computer, and if I'm smart, I'll also back them up onto a CD or a DVD, because think about it. I mean, you know, if you have a gigabyte card, that's more than a CD will hold. You have a few of those, and it fills up.
Well, we have several callers waiting, and I'm afraid that I have, you know, sort of yacked away here and taking what should be their time. We'll go.
One of them hung up.
I'm sorry about that. If you'd like to call back, we'll get you in. We'll go next to a Champagne listener, line number one. Good morning.
Hi. I know the professor from our family church, and I'm 69 and disabled. My husband is 75. I have an old-fashioned Pentax camera. My question is, in terms of priorities, I pay a lot for my medication. Should I buy a new camera? And then I'll listen to your answer, and I'll hang on. Thank you.
Okay, great. I'm never one that's telling people to abandon what they have that's working for them, because so often people would come up and you know, see my cameras and say, wow, what a great camera, you must shoot really great pictures, and I wish I had a great camera. And I said, well, do you have a camera now? And they would say yes. I said, well, do you get the pictures that you want to get from that camera? And they would almost invariably say yes. I said, well, it sounds like a pretty good camera then, you know? What else do you really want from it? So my feeling is that if the camera you have works for what you're doing with it, there's really no reason to rush out and get something different.
Okay.
So I think that, you know, staying with that is fine. Now, I think, let's say in 5 years, it might get a little bit tougher to find places that will still process film. I think for the next 5 years, easily, it shouldn't be a problem. But I bet places are going to start dropping off and not offer film processing. And that maybe will change the equation.
Thank you. I have another question, quick. I've noticed that disabled elderly people don't do well unless, you know, you with a camera, modern camera, gadgets baffle them. So give your opinion on that. Now hang up and listen.
Sure.
Okay.
And I think what you said was exactly true. It's that in photography, for the longest time, we'd have periods of maybe, I don't know, 20 years where basically the general form of the camera did not change. So we had the 35-millimeter film cameras, for instance, and you had the point-and-shoot variety, and you had the single-lens reflex variety. But basically, the form was the same. Where the controls were located were the same. Everything was pretty easy to move from camera to camera. Well, particularly with the advent of the digital cameras, there is a wide range of features that are available, a wide range of ways to get at those features on the camera, and different menu structures on the little LCD screen you look at to control all these things. So it really does become difficult to go from camera to camera to camera. And that's why even when we were still talking about film, but even more so now, if people ask me, well, what kind of camera should I get? My response is always, you have to go somewhere, hopefully to a camera store, and look at the different models, have someone explain how to get to all those features, and then choose the one that makes the most sense to you. I think the quality of each of the different major brands, Canon, Nikon, you know, Pentax, Minolta, you know, all the quality levels are going to be about the same, but how they've implemented the features of the camera are going to vary widely, and you really need to choose the camera almost by which one makes the most sense. I'm going to add one real quick thing onto that. Some of these cameras have a multitude of buttons scattered all over the back of the camera. Many times they're very small buttons. They'll have little icons that are hard to read. If you've got the camera at the wrong angle, you might get glare and can't see it. I mean, and so for elderly and disabled people, that could be a real tremendous issue, because trying to get the camera to do what you need it to do when you can't really get at those buttons very easily or really understand what the little symbols mean, that can be an issue.
Mm-hmm. We may come back to that, because yeah. I've run into that recently, but I want to get to a caller who we've been...
Great.
Actually,
they've been very patient.
They've been very patient. A caller in Rantoul, line number 4. Good morning.
Yes, your answer earlier about 11 megapixels roughly equating to 200-speed film was very helpful. I had a question. If you're scanning into JPEG format,
uh-huh.
How many megapixels does a 500-kilobyte file equate to?
You know, You know, there isn't a way to answer that question, because in the JPEG file format, you can set many different levels of compression. So if you set the compression quality to low, a 500K picture could be an enormous mm-hmm. size photo. Whereas if you set it to high, it could be sort of a snapshot size, or like a 5x7. Now, something else about the JPEG format is that the amount of detail in the photo also determines on how much compression can happen. So if you have a simple photo, like a plain gray background and just the person there, you can compress that photo quite a bit more than a picture, let's say an overall picture of someone's flower garden that had lots and lots and lots of little detail. But a JPEG photo that's 500K would actually be, in general terms, a pretty good resolution photo.
Well, see, I have an SLR camera, and I've taken to getting the photos and a photo CD from a nationally recognized Arkansas-based merchandiser.
Okay.
the photos look excellent, but what is the limitation of a computer screen these days, your average computer screen?
Well, you know,
pixels?
Right. You know, many of the computer screens that people are using are like 1028x7, 68 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's under 2 megapixels then.
Right, right. And the thing is that many times when you're looking at the picture, the program you're looking at them with will resize them so they fit on your screen. And it is something that it's very difficult to get people to kind of get a handle on what that means, that you actually have more resolution in your picture. But the pixels on your screen aren't that many, so they actually kind of squeeze 2 pixels of your picture into 1 pixel on the screen some.
Right. So what is the use? I mean, are there printers that will print the same quality image that I can get through photographic film? I mean, that don't cost $10,000?
You know, it's really an amazing thing is that even the cheapest, you know, $70, $80 inkjet printer will print an amazing quality image for you.
I knew that. I just didn't know how. I never bothered to compare it to the actual photograph itself.
Right, right. So. And there are places where you can take your image files and they'll actually print it out on photo paper for you.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's been quite a number of advances in that way, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, I thank you very much for getting a hold of me and... glad to have the service available.
Great.
All
thank
right.
You.
Thanks so much for the call. We're past our midpoint. I need to reintroduce our guest. Brian Johnson is with us. He's professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois. He teaches photojournalism and is a photographer, a professional photographer for many years. And we're taking your questions on cameras and photography. We're talking a lot about digital photography naturally. But any questions are welcome. We can talk about film.
Sure.
That's okay.
I know about film.
That's right. You do. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Just a quick follow-up, and then we'll get to a caller who just joined us on the issue of screen resolution on a computer. Basically, computer screens are pretty low resolution devices.
Yes. Oh, they are.
You know, 72 dots per inch, something like that, is the typical tip.
Right, right. and that's why it becomes so difficult as you're talking about the megapixels, because as the, I think it was the first caller who's the carpenter mentioned, he bought a 2-megapixel camera because he's not printing the pictures. He's
right.
only emailing them.
Right.
And for web pages, for emailing, even in video, because video right now, even HD videos, even though it looks beautiful, is pretty low resolution from a still photograph point of view. But the resolutions of on-screen viewing, your needs are very low, actually. And it's only when you get to needing to print something out where you need more resolution, or if you need to crop the photo. Because if you're always using the entire picture and printing it out, you won't need necessarily more than 3 megapixels. But if you want to get in and crop and print something out, that's where having more resolution can come in handy. So if you're just going to do little slideshows on your computer, or you're going to plug your digital camera into your TV screen, you don't really need that much resolution, and they'll look great.
Okay. We have a listener in Downs next on line number one. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes.
I heard what you just said about going out and trying cameras, but I want some advice from you, specific advice
sure.
anyway, if I can.
Sure.
My husband is an old SLR man, started old enough to be getting ready to retire, and I hope he's going to go back and do some photography. Started with a Leica, had a baby Rolly, for years has had a Nikon, and never even made peace with autofocus.
Uh-huh.
So, but he has accepted the fact that he's going to have to go digital. Where would you send someone like that?
Well, again, I mean, I would send them to a camera store. So in the Champaign-Urbana area, we have Bates Camera. And
right,
they,
but I mean in terms of what you think.
Sure. Well, I think that he should get an SLR digital camera. You know, when we're talking about the digital SLRs, there are basically two types. There's one type that'll be exactly like the Nikon that he has now. And instead of using film, it has a digital imaging sensor.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's another type of SLR camera. But what it is, it's more like the viewfinder on a video camera. Now, for someone like your husband, I would not recommend that route.
Mm-hmm.
Even though those cameras are less expensive, you know, $300, $400, $500, $600, his user experience with those cameras, I don't think will be satisfactory.
Okay.
And I think he'll be frustrated.
Okay.
Canon and Nikon both have entry-level SLR cameras that aren't ungodly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So Canon has their Digital Rebel that right now they have some rebates on. So with a lens, you can get it for like $800 or
okay.
so. I know that Nikon has, since I'm not a Nikon person, I think it's like the D70 is their model. That's also a very excellent camera. I think that one is a little bit more. It might be $1,000.
Okay.
Now, the Photo Marketing Association has their show coming up, I believe, in February. And most of the manufacturers introduce new cameras at that point. I think that Canon's likely to introduce a new Digital Rebel just because they have the rebate on the old one.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Nikon had some new ones coming out too.
Okay.
So I wouldn't rush out and buy anything today or tomorrow, but I'd maybe wait for a month or two.
Okay.
But the good news is that there are SLR cameras, single lens reflex cameras, just like the 35 millimeter cameras that a long time photographers used to using,
uh-huh.
and they operate very much in the same way as those cameras as well. So
okay.
I think you'll feel really comfortable.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Good luck. A couple other callers. We'll go next to an Urbana listener on line number two. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really attracted by PowerPoint projections.
Uh-huh.
And this is after a lot of years of projected 35 millimeter slides. You know, the versatility of combining images and adding captions and the brilliance of those projectors. What absolutely stops me, though, is the cost of, as I understand it, a laptop, the projector, and the cost of, I don't know if their projection tubes burn out or what happens. Is there any way to get around what I estimate to be around $3,000 startup, not counting the software on the computer?
No. You know, it, what you found is exactly right, that right now the projectors are still relatively pricey. Sometimes I've seen, you know, sales on some, or they've come down to maybe $700 or $800. You can maybe get a laptop. You know, that would easily do what you're wanting to do for $700,000-$800,000 easily. So maybe for $1,700 or $2,000 you could do it. Now, one other option that you might want to think about that you might not be 100% crazy about, but with many of the digital almost all the digital cameras, you can plug them directly into a TV. So it doesn't have that same sort of beautiful, in the dark, vibrant colors on the projected image showing up. But, you know, there's some really decent TVs out there too. And if you plug your digital camera just directly into that TV, you can forward and
yeah,
backwards through that. So that might be a kind of an intermediate option.
I give programs, and I've got a very versatile mobile regular 35 millimeter projection outfit that I couldn't count on. I don't think I want to carry a TV.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some very small portable projectors too. So, but as we've said, I think you still are looking in the probably $2,000 to $3,000 range.
What's the issue with used equipment? PowerPoints, used computers used to be, or are, fairly easy to pick up.
Sure, absolutely. You could completely do that, because what you're doing isn't tremendously taxing on the processor, so that would be good. The biggest problem with the projectors, you mentioned it a little bit, is that the bulbs are fairly expensive, $100 or $200 or $300, depending upon the model of projector. And some of the projectors are somewhat delicate, they don't always do really well being moved around a lot. And so you'd want to be sure that, the various, you know, RGB components of the projector, when you're looking at a projected image, look like they're pretty much aligned properly and working.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you. Our lines are mostly full. We'll go on next to a Champagne listener, line number 3. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. I recently bought a Panasonic DMC FC20, and I read pretty good reviews on it on a website called dpreview.com, which I found to be pretty informative. And I just wanted to get your opinion also on this particular camera, and also regarding secure digital cards. Are there any significant differences between the brands? I know the prices vary a lot between the different brands of SD cards.
Sure. I'm not familiar with that camera specifically, so I'm not going to be able to really comment on that. On the memory cards, I used to think that might not make that much difference, you know, a card is a card is a card.
Right.
So I did buy sort of a second-tier brand of card, and it hasn't performed as well as I would have liked it to. So the brand of memory cards that I always buy is Lexar. I also think that SanDisk would be a good solid brand too, because they were one of the first out there with the technology. So I think SanDisk and Lexar are the two brands that I would stick with.
Then we say it didn't perform the way you would have liked it to. What's the difference?
Meaning I stuck in the card in the reader, and you know, there was some data loss. It couldn't, you know, get to some parts, and sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't.
Mm.
you know, wasn't really treated in, you know, an abusive manner or anything. It just really wasn't working well. So,
what brand would that be, if you don't mind me asking?
It was a Viking brand, okay. Which is, you know, pretty well out there, and it could be that it's just one bad stray card. So I wouldn't say by any means that it's all the way across the product line at all. I'd rather approach it from the standpoint that with the Lexar cards, particularly if you buy their professional series cards, they have a lifetime guarantee, uh-huh. And they have data recovery software that comes with the card. So I think there are just some benefits to Lexar as a company, and also as you know, from the different models of cards that they offer.
Would you happen to know anything about Kingston Technology?
You know, I think they're sort of in that second tier. I think they're good. It's a good, solid company. They're all over. I wouldn't be afraid to use them whatsoever. Okay. And as I say, that's sort of why I approach it more. That I know that the Lexar cards are solid. I think the Kingston ones would be solid too. But I think they're more into the price end of things rather than, you know, guaranteeing things for professional use. I guess.
I'm getting a pretty good deal on one on buy.com. It's like, I think, around $30 after a mail-in rebate.
Yeah. Well, you know, try it out, and, you know, if it starts giving you problems, try reformatting it. If that doesn't do it, then just know that, you know, you got the use out of it that you did, and you need to move on to a new card.
Yeah, it might be worth it for the money.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to a Chicago listener on line number 4. Good morning.
Hello. I need advice on purchasing a camera. I haven't purchased a camera except for disposable cameras in 20 years.
Right.
And that's because my very best camera was a Kodak Brownie box camera.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Great.
It was so mechanically simple.
Right.
And I'm not good mechanically. And also, I like to do portraits or still life in black and white. So I've been thinking about going back to that as a hobby. But when I look around casually just in the pharmacy, they very seldom have black and white film or anything. And no one seems to talk about black and white. So Is it even a possibility? And is there any camera on the market that's as simple as a Kodak Brownie box camera and gives the same beautiful pictures?
Sure. Kodak actually has a film out there that, even though it's essentially a color film, mm-hmm. They've taken the color out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a black and white film that that you just take your normal color film processor, and when they process the film, there's no color in the film. So when they print it, it essentially gives you sort of a black and white image.
Does it have a name?
It does, and I wish I had that with me. I think it's like it's 400. I don't know.
Okay.
I normally bring a magazine with me so I can look up that stuff while we're talking, and I didn't do that today. So, but if you look, it says 4 black and white images, and it says process C41. So that'll be your tip off.
C41.
C, yeah. C as in cat. Yeah.
Okay. C41. And is there any camera that's as simple as a Brownie box camera?
You know, a lot of the point-and-shoot 35mm cameras are very simple to use. You know, you load the film in, it'll advance the film. As you shoot it, it'll, you know, deal with advancing and rewinding the film at the end. So what you lose is some control over exposure and things like that, but really, if you buy a fairly inexpensive, you know, $30, $40, $50, maybe up to $60 35mm point and shoot, they are actually pretty easy to use.
Well, they give the same clarity that the Brownie, but it used to almost look like base relief. They were just really very clear in the print.
Right. One thing about the like a box camera is that the film size was quite a bit larger.
Mm-hmm.
So that did help out with the sharpness and the look of it. But 35mm film these days is so good and so sharp that I think you'll be pretty reasonably impressed with that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. One thing about the point-and-shoot film cameras, I bought one a couple of years ago, and I made a poor choice.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say what brand it was because, you know, the same brand might have a better camera, certainly. But the problem I had with it was, you know, like digital cameras. I mean, you it takes a while to take the picture. Mm. It doesn't just click and you've made a shot.
Right.
And this was, you know, a new thing for me because, right, you know, the Brownies and the old film cameras, it's a mechanical,
right,
shutter.
Right.
You click it and it
and there it goes.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And that is a tremendous problem with not quite as much with the film cameras, I think. And I say that partially because as you move to the digital cameras, mm-hmm, that are inexpensive, the shutter delay is maddening, you know, where you press it and it's thinking or focusing or doing something. I don't know, calling its mother. I don't know what the camera's doing. But it just makes you want,
right,
to destroy the camera on the spot. So it does take a little bit of adjusting in how you shoot things, particularly if you're trying to capture moments. It can be frustrating. But the more expensive cameras usually have one of the things they do is they really work on reducing that shutter delay.
Yeah.
So
good. A couple callers remaining. We'll go next to a listener in Danville on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a Nikon that uses a compact flash card, and I have a reader that I have plugged in to the hub at home on my computer. And a friend of mine came over, and she had a different kind of a stick with,
right,
an adapter that could plug in to that hub.
Uh-huh.
I plugged it in, and yet it wouldn't read her, it wouldn't read that. It kept coming up that...
not enough power?
No, not enough drive. It didn't have a driver or something like that.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
See. So what, I mean, my other, when I plugged it in, I asked her, did she have a CD that went with it? And she said, no, they just plugged it into their computer at home, and it worked.
Right.
Something that, I mean, is a stick. It's called a stick of some kind.
Right, it's a memory stick.
Probably Sony.
Memory,
yeah,
stick, that's right.
Yeah, Sony.
You could probably download.
I would probably go to the Sony side,
yeah,
and see.
Do what?
If you go to Sony's website, you know, you could track down and see what kind of drivers needed or whoever. Now, did your memory card reader also read memory sticks, or did she bring her own reader?
She brought her own reader.
Yeah. I would also look at the brand of that and see if it would do it.
It depends on the operating system of the computer, too.
Yeah, because part of it is I'm a Mac person, and Apple has done a really good job putting all those drivers and things right in the system, so you almost never, ever need to do it.
And so is Windows XP for the most,
yeah,
part.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Well,
so,
I have a PC with Windows 98.
Windows,
yeah,
98, that's probably the issue,
and
then.
And I think that's it. There's probably a driver that you need to download.
Okay.
So you go to...
If I went to Sony, then they'd have that.
Well, I would go to the manufacturer of the card reader itself.
Oh. I don't remember what that was.
Yeah, but you could go to Sony in the meantime because they would probably have kind of general information that would help you.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have just about maybe 3 minutes left and a caller on line number two in Champaign. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Professor Johnson. You answered my first question for getting close-up picture of the items to accompany a technical article.
Sure.
Needed a bigger megapixel capacity. I use a 3.1 megapixel, and that's not quite enough. I
okay.
can't get close enough. The other one is sometimes I try to edit the pictures through a simple program I have on a computer, I think called ACDC. And I get a flag that says the picture contains metadata, and by selecting this, you will lose that. I was wondering what that is, and is it something important to have?
Sure.
Embedded with the picture, or if I lose them, is it a big deal or not?
Right. Depending upon the camera, but most of them actually will record information such as the date and time that you shot the photo, what, you know, ISO setting you had, what the resolution setting was. I mean, there's quite a bit of technical information that can go along with that image file. And I guess your program isn't able to look at that information. It's also then not going to save it with the file when it resaves it. So I'm guessing that that's what it is. since I'm mostly using Photoshop, or if I'm using a lower end on the Mac, it's iPhoto, and it pretty much deals with all that information and keeps it intact.
Okay.
So, you know, it could be, and there's some, you know, like Adobe has Adobe Elements, Photoshop Elements, and they also have
Photo album.
Photo album. That's what I was looking
for. Which is really inexpensive, like $30
really
or something.
Exactly. And that might be something to look into. And also, Google just came out with something that I was just reading about last night. And their program is free, actually.
Interesting.
So there's some programs that you can get that probably would just maintain that data for you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for the call. Well, we have about a minute left. I don't know if there's anything that we want to tidy up any of these topics. You know, one of the things that I think you emphasized in a lot answer to a lot of the questions is, you know, pick up the cameras and like see how they fit you.
Right, exactly. And you know, if a camera doesn't make sense to you, it's not because you're an idiot. It's because the people who designed it wasn't meshing really with how you think. And it's so important. Some cameras are so difficult to operate now because the menu structure is so deep. One thing we didn't talk about that I'll just mention to people, get out your camera manuals and look up white balance. Most of the cameras have kind of automatic white balance, but there's a lot you can do with white balance that can help improve your images.
Okay. Well, we may talk about that next time
yeah.
in more detail.
Great.
But we're out of time.
Okay,
so
Jack, thanks.
Thanks to Brian Johnson, professor of journalism here at the University of Illinois. Always a pleasure to have you.